I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. 3 weeks ago, Governor Hogan announced a massive effort to erase blight in Baltimore, hundreds of millions of dollars to demolish vacant homes across the city and replace them with green space, affordable housing, and businesses. Tearing down 4,000 vacants over 4 years would make a big dent in the city's estimated figure of 16,000 vacant buildings. But critics question whether the funds will materialize. And if they do, who will get the jobs? What will the work do to the environment? And who will be able to afford the new homes? In this hour, we talk to Baltimore Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano, Ray Kelly, a community organizer and lifelong resident of Sandtown, and you. It's midday after the news. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad that you're with us. It has been a little over 3 weeks since Governor Hogan stood with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake to announce a $700 million blight elimination project, a four-year partnership between the state and the city. The effort is known as Project CORE, for Creating Opportunities for Renewal and Enterprise. It has identified 4,000 properties across the city to be demolished. People saw the first to go in the 1,000 block of North Stricker Street in Sandtown, Winchester, during the governor's press conference. Many questions have been raised since we saw that bulldozer tear into that townhouse. Questions about pollutants like lead escaping when old buildings are pulled down, about who will get jobs created from this ramped-up demolition program. Questions about the scope of the project, its goals, how it differs from other development efforts already in place, how it's being funded. What are your thoughts? Do you live in a neighborhood that's seen the negative impact of vacant homes? What type of development are you hoping this project attracts? Do you have concerns about the massive project? Call us. Our local number is 410-662-8780, or send us an email to midday@wypr.org. With me in the studio is Paul Graziano. He's Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Baltimore City and Commissioner of the Baltimore City Department of Housing and Community Development. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sheila.
Appreciate your coming in. Also here is Ray Kelly. Ray Kelly is a Sandtown resident, community organizer for the No Boundaries Coalition, a resident-led organization that works to empower West and Central Baltimore neighborhoods. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. And we had planned also to speak to a representative from Maryland's Department of Housing and Community Development about where the money for this project is coming from and other questions. Unfortunately, they had to cancel. But yesterday, Baltimore Sun opinion editor Andy Green spoke with WIPR's Fraser Smith on Inside Maryland Politics about where the money is coming from. It turns out that the budget the governor sent to the legislature does not include money for CORE. And that raises questions about how much of the $700 million Governor Hogan talked about is new money and how much was already planned to be spent on blight in Baltimore. Here is what Andy Green told Fraser Smith on that point.
The bottom line is the demolition money is mostly new money. Of the $75 million, about $60-some million of that is money that Baltimore probably would not have gotten anyway. So that, you know, that's a legitimate commitment of funds over 4 years. But all of the incentive money is basically funding that would otherwise have already been available in one form or another.
By incentive money, Andy Green means funds that would support redevelopment. Andy Green's view was that people looking at this project are still, quote, what he said, pretty nervous, close quote, because supplemental budgets tend to be used for political leverage. Commissioner Graziano, I know the state funding is not your bailiwick, but I also know you're pretty familiar with how things work.
Sure.
So I'd like to get your impression of whether this money is where you expect it to be and how much of it would actually be a new flow of funds into Baltimore and how much was already on its way anyway.
Well, it's as you say, it's a state process, but we do obviously work within that context. Clearly, the demolition money is new money, and it is orders of magnitude greater than what has ever been appropriated before. I have been in extensive discussions with Secretary Holt at the State Department of Housing and Community Development and the governor's office, and have been assured, as I am told the mayor has been assured, that that money will be forthcoming. There are a number of other pots of money that relate to housing tax credits and tax-exempt bond financing and so forth that we certainly would want to tap into. And I think what's important there is whether the money is coming to Baltimore, even if it was a pre-existing source. And one thing that encourages me is that about a month ago now, the state did announce the awards of low-income housing tax credit projects, and we got six projects funded in the city of Baltimore, which are in very critical areas that will not only provide affordable housing, well over 400 units of new affordable housing, but will also help us in our blight elimination investment strategy, because we will be clearing and assembling sites and then working with developers to get that housing built.
So Warren Deschenaux, who is executive director of the legislature's Department of Legislative Services, essentially mm-hmm. they do a lot of the research that goes into legislation, and he wrote the chairs of the budget committee essentially saying, to conclude, based on available information, approximately 90% of the announced financing plan is either already planned, Department of Housing and Community Development funding, already anticipated tax credits, or subsidized financing that is not appropriate for demolition work and is not direct state support. But you're saying the thing to look at is not whether it's new money, but whether there is a new commitment to funnel it into Baltimore projects as opposed to spending it elsewhere in the state.
Yes. The state of Maryland, through this administration, has supported very strongly, for instance, our efforts at the Housing Authority to preserve 4,100 units of public housing with $350 million of investment through tax credits and other private equity sources. So that's a huge commitment as well. So there's 24 developments that are affected, and they are in the types of neighborhoods that we're talking about. We're trying to deal with the blight elimination and reinvestment. So that would be one example. And as I said, we got 6 out of 17 tax credit awards in December for the entire state.
Well, one of the things that confused me about as some of the sources mm-hmm. of money for, again, the incentive part, not the $75 million of demolition. Everybody seems to agree that's a lot more than has been available to spend, and that could really change how things look. And Ray Kelly, I'm going to ask you in a minute what your reaction is to especially that part of the program. But the incentive part, the kind of money that could support rebuilding, the biggest chunk of it seems to come from a program that WIPR has covered, the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program, RAD, which, as I understand it, has to do with redeveloping developers, giving developers incentives to redevelop and rehab public housing. Yes. How would that connect to this blight elimination program that Governor Hogan announced?
Well, and that's the program. That was the effort I was just referencing. The state has been working with us to preserve 4,100 units of public housing. This is not a redevelopment program. It is a reinvestment in the existing stock.
So this is not developing something that would go into where the vacants are.
Right. This is ensuring that those 24 sites do not become derelict and then we have to abandon them and are sitting there as, you know, empty shells. We have to reinvest. We have, as I said, $350 million worth of capital need. So this is a preservation strategy. And these are critical anchors within these communities. So it's not a blight elimination, but it's a blight prevention program and a preservation of affordable housing. That piece of it is.
Gotcha. Now I understand that connection. Ray Kelly, you've been a resident of Sandtown your whole life, right?
Yes.
And you're now a community organizer for the No Boundaries Coalition. Tell us what the No Boundaries Coalition does.
So what we do is we are a resident-led initiative, and we advocate to break down the boundaries of race, class, neighborhood, and the eight neighborhoods that surround Pennsylvania Avenue. We kind of look at that main street as our equity corridor, so we address the issues of police and community relationships. We address the health desert issues that affect our community, and we kind of advocate for resident empowerment. So we kind of do listening campaigns that hear the residents' concern, and we kind of form resident-led actions to kind of inject ourselves into anything that's concerning rebuilding our community. We kind of live on a do with and not for type mentality in our community. So
do with and not for.
Right. We try to invite people to build on what's already happening in the community.
So tell me then, with that background, what has been the reaction? What do you pick up from people in your neighborhoods, reaction to the governor's proposals?
Well, the history creates a skepticism that can only be shaken with inclusion. We kind of don't feel like we know what's going on. And we hear the talk of the initiatives, but we know that money has been pledged before, where this demolition money is great, but we want to know what are the plans that are in place to kind of address the repercussions from the demolition. Like, you have areas of blight and empty houses where in a high open-air drug market, there's repercussions such as stash houses and drug trade now having to move from this wide open area into residential areas. So there are major concerns on how that issue is going to be addressed when... Go ahead.
Let me make sure I understand what you're telling me. I think you're saying that there have been places where there have been previous demolition, or for whatever reason, there's some undeveloped land. And there's kind of an accommodation that's where the worst of the drug dealing happens.
Well, not the demolition, just the blight. I mean, like, the grime brings crime. So if there are neighborhoods, blocks of empty, unoccupied houses where there's no neighbors to call and say someone's going in the back door, there's a crowd. And these are places now where we have this high drug activity. And when they're gone, the surrounding communities, if the patrols, the police are not in place, all the necessary elements are not in place to prevent it, this surge of violence is going to spread more into the residential area. So there's a lot of things that concern our residents that need to be in place as we progress.
Let me ask Commissioner Graziano to address some of what you've just heard Ray Kelly raise, some of the concerns.
Sure. Sheila, and I hear Ray, and we are certainly cognizant of those concerns, and we want to be very inclusive. One of the things I would say is that as we in the past, now keep in mind the mayor had quadrupled the amount of money for demolition several years prior to this effort, so we've ramped up quite a bit, and we've already demolished about 1,700 properties under the Vacants to Value initiative, so we have a fair amount of experience. We have worked with communities to select whole blocks for demolition, and we also include the police in that discussion because there are situations where there are hot spots where that aggregation of vacants indeed does attract that criminal behavior. So one, clearing out those sites does eliminate a spot. It might be an entire city block where there are concentrations of illegal activity. It also makes for safer routes, for instance, for school children going from home to school and so forth. So there are a lot of reasons to get rid of the blight. But I agree that there has to be a follow-up there, which is to work with the community to understand that some of this activity could shift to other places. But our experience has been that communities where we've done this whole block demolition are elated at the accomplishment of eliminating the blight, Even on in Sandtown, Winchester, where we were the other day with the mayor and the governor, on the 1,000 block of Stricker, if you go over there now, you see all that cleared land, and you look behind it, and you see all the homeowners that are there who, for years, decades actually, had to look at that blighted, all those blighted structures behind their backyards. So I think if you ask people on one level, sort of the initial level, yes, get rid of the blight, but there's a totally legitimate question there about what follows and how do we work with the communities to ensure that we don't just move the problem.
Totally legitimate question about what follows. We're going to pick up on that after we take a short break here on Midday. We're talking about Governor Hogan's plans for eliminating or reducing blight in Baltimore. Here with me in the studio is Baltimore Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano and Ray Kelly, a community organizer with the No Boundaries Coalition, a lifelong resident of Sandtown. And we'd like you to join the conversation. Do you live in a neighborhood with vacant properties? What do you think of this massive blight elimination project? What types of development do you think would be a boon to the city? You can join the conversation. Our local number is 410-662-8780. And our email address is midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm here in the studio with Baltimore Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano and with Ray Kelly, community organizer with the No Boundaries Coalition. He's a lifelong resident of Sandtown. We're talking about Governor Hogan's proposal for eliminating or reducing blight in Baltimore. The governor put a $700 million price tag on what would be spent both to tear down vacant buildings in Baltimore and redevelop that with affordable housing, businesses, green space. We'd like you to be part of the conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 and tell us what you think about this proposal. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I want to pick up on what we were talking about before the break. How was the community involved in discussing or helping plan this particular initiative? Commissioner Graziano?
The Vacants to Value initiative, which is Mayor Rollins Blake's initiative that was set up 5 years ago, has had tremendous input from the community, one of the many communities. One of the fundamentals of that is the demolition strategy. So the way we view it locally is that the governor's demolition funds are a supplement, a major supplement, to what the mayor has dedicated in terms of quadrupling the amount of demolition funds over the next 10 years, but that it's part and parcel of a set of strategies that have been vetted fully with communities.
And Ray Kelly, how does that sound to you? I mean, do you feel like, I mean, we all, I think, were struck by the phrase that Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake used at that press conference, that this initiative by the governor put the demolition program on steroids. So do you feel like the whatever community involvement there was before January 5th is still pertinent?
I believe at the grass level, the community, though we've known that we've had blight issues and we've talked about it, the whole plan was a shock. Nobody knew it was going to happen until we had this press conference where, in particular, the 1,000 block of Stricker Street where they had this whole press conference was kind of, if you talk to community leaders indigenous to the area, this has been kind of slated for demolition since 2009. So there's been issues with that block, but to actually implement it with the governor's plan was, we didn't know about it on the community grassroots organizational level until that press conference.
Do you think there is still discussion that should be had, even though the program has already started?
Without a doubt, I feel like we're falling into the same practice that's kind of got the community skeptical in the first place. Is people, we find out on street level when it's happening, and we get invited to participate and another person's plan for our community, and we just feel like everything needs to come to the table that's going to happen in our community, because we have not just statistical data, but we have day-to-day life experience in these communities where we know what will happen with certain initiatives, where we feel like the governor comes in and he sees these abandoned blocks and this is a problem, this is terrible, this has to go. But really, he doesn't see what contributed to these problems. Why did so many people abandon the whole block? And he's not seeing the part of the actual drug trade and the increased violence, crime, and things of that nature. He's just thinking that if he eliminates it, it'll be gone. And our fear is if he keeps eliminating, we'll be gone. With this development, we want to make sure that I heard Commissioner Graziano talk about the RAD funding, which is for the public housing, and there's questions about how does that get dispersed. We kind of know that there are groups outside of Sandtown, Winchester, that work hard to kind of lift their community in the same way, and they're just as eligible. We kind of want to know what's the plan for disbursement neighborhood-wise. What's in the projection for the community that kind of struggled through this blight and tried to sustain our communities just because it's our home, it's home for us. It's not really a Sandtown, Winchester. This is where we live. So
it's a stunning concern when I hear you say that you think if they keep eliminating, maybe we'll be eliminated. Commissioner Graziano, how do you react to that?
Well, let me just say generally, obviously our goal is to make these communities better for the people who live there. And I should say that this funding from the state that the governor has committed, the demolition funds, it's a funding source. It's not a plan. And we have engaged with communities throughout the city on neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block planning, and are fully committed to continuing and dramatically expanding that, given the dramatically expanded funds. We met, for instance, with Ray and folks from the Sandtown community, I think just before Labor Day, and we're now that we've got some significant commitment of more demolition funds. In fact, we were talking in the other room as we were waiting to come on. We're eager to sit back down with the folks from Sandtown, Winchester, and get very specific about their community, which blocks, what activity. And we're going to repeat that in neighborhoods throughout. Right across Pennsylvania Avenue, for instance, in the Druid Heights neighborhood, we've been working with the community for several years on a program which will now result in $4 million worth of demolition in Druid Heights. And one of the tax credit awards that I just mentioned earlier will fund a new 90 units of new affordable housing on one or more of the sites that are being cleared. So there are varying levels of specificity depending on how much engagement we've had with the community, how much of a plan has been developed. But we consider demolition to be chapter one. And I should have said it right up front. We consider also demolition to be the last resort, not the first resort. So we first want to determine, are there other viable ways to address the problem, the physical problem? And no matter how we address the physical problem, for instance, we have through Vacance to Value, seen the renovation of over 2,600 long-term vacant houses that are now fully renovated and occupied. So that's the other side of it, renovating properties versus clearance where it's not feasible. All that needs to be sorted out with each community case by case.
Stu is calling us from Annapolis, but I understand actually works in Sandtown. Stu, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I was calling to refer to the money that supposedly is coming in, and with the exception of the demolition money, all the other money seems to have already been allocated. There seems to be very little new money going in. The RAD money had previously been allocated for specific units, public housing unit replacement. The other money seems to have been allocated through the state's rating and ranking process, which was well in process, well underway before this whole thing happened. And it's tax credit money that was awarded to projects based on a competition that's statewide. Just happened that the city got a good portion of the allocation this year, and the rest of the money seems to be bond money. So not only is there no new money, there is very little money that actually subsidizes residents, and the cost of housing, if placed in Sandtown, Winchester, or anywhere, is probably going to be beyond the reach of most of the tenants who are currently living there.
Yeah, I agree. So,
Ray, you wanted to thank you for the call, Stu.
That's exactly what we're saying is we haven't seen the plans or if there is any plans. But for one, the demolition money, if you come to Sandtown, Winchester, you'll see where we've had demolition. We have plenty of green space, so to speak, that's been left with the demolition was there, but there's no funds for redevelopment. And like the caller just said, that there's a great concern that with any new development, the pricing will be out of reach of the people that live there, where we think with groups coming in, it's easy to say that we can create a lower median price for a house outside of our neighborhood because you're coming down. But when you're in Sandtown, Winchester, you have a population that's trying to come up to meet 100 or 150,000 for a house. And that's truthfully 70% of the population is at that poverty range where that's not affordable to them, even though it's broader market wise affordable housing. It's not affordable to our residents.
I have heard and been reading comments about concerns about gentrification. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Graziano, is that something that concerns you?
I believe that that this is an issue that can be addressed in an effective way. If I look at Sandtown, Winchester, I see that I think in excess of 600 affordable homeownership opportunities have been created over the last several decades, working with Enterprise and Habitat. And we are currently working with Habitat, for instance, in an area that we call a community development cluster area, which is in the northeast corner of Sandtown, Winchester, and just off of Pennsylvania Avenue. I think that our goal, we are cognizant of the need for and the anxiety about people wanting affordable housing and feeling like they may be displaced. We're going to continue to work with groups like Habitat. We're going to continue to work with, that'd be on the home ownership side, we're going to continue to work with those who can develop affordable rental housing. But again, the demolition as the last resort, but where it's needed, is the first step. It's the chapter one that gives immediate relief to some of the folks, like I said, right behind Stricker Street. You got a whole city block of homeowners there who will now be looking out at some green space. The real question is what's the ultimate use of that? And I agree with Ray. We have to sit down and have those and hammer out those plans with the community. And we're ready in this. Now, keep in mind, there's three levels of actors here. There's the state, there's the city, and then there are the various communities. I feel very strongly that we at the city have a much closer relationship with the people in the various communities. My team and I have been meeting with folks for many years in different communities. The state has essentially acknowledged to us that they don't see that as their role, and I'm actually encouraged by that statement because I don't want the state coming in and starting to try to dictate where this blight elimination and reinvestment occurs. I want us to continue to work with communities and expand the work with the communities.
But I think Ray would say it sort of feels like the state is dictating.
Right, and that's kind of what we see. For one, history can only speak for itself. You have to actually look at the track record and we don't downplay anyone's good intentions, but the results are what they are in Sandtown, and it hasn't been favorable for our community. And what has to change is the way that they actually do things. We have to be included in the beginning, because that fear is there. It's disinvestment for decades that kind of shaped the way people address these type of presentations and announcements.
That is Ray Kelly, a community organizer with the No Boundaries Coalition here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano. We're talking about Governor Hogan's proposals for getting rid of blight in Baltimore. Jason is calling us from Baltimore. Jason, welcome. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you for having me. What I want to say is that what's striking to me about this whole situation is that the governor refused to build the red line, which would have been a boon for economic development and jobs, but is perfectly happy to spend almost $1 billion to tear down parts of the city.
I appreciate your call, Jason. I would point out that the demolition part of this is projected to be about $75 million, not $1 billion. And there's some questions that we've been hashing over in this hour about whether actually the other hundreds of millions of dollars being talked about, how much of that is actually new to this program. But I'll let anybody here in the studio address Jason if you'd like to. Okay. Jason, I do appreciate your making that point. Maya is also calling us from Baltimore.
Yes. I was on the line before you started talking about renovation, so maybe my question is no longer relevant. But my question is, can't that demolition money be used for renovation for new people to live in Baltimore City? And also, I know that there's about 71,000 people on the waiting list for affordable public housing. Couldn't those houses be used to house them being renovated instead of demolished?
I appreciate you focusing those questions for us, Maya.
Sure.
I think a lot of people are wondering why demolition, not renovation, and what does this mean for people waiting for public housing?
Well, first of all, as I said, demolition we view as the last resort, not the first resort, and we do all kinds of technical assessments to look at the structural integrity and the cost of renovation and what the condition is of the whole block and so forth. And for instance, if there are scattered vacants interspersed in a block that is largely occupied, we're not going in there and demolishing those properties. We are renovating. And I'll give you one example, which is not there but is on Broadway on the other side of town. There was a block, the 1200 block of Broadway, that under vacants to value, there was a lot of private investment, and the entire block was renovated. It was mostly, pretty much entirely vacant. The Housing Authority owned four units there that had been sitting there because we didn't want to have people living next to an entire vacant block. Once that private investment came in, we went in and did a gut rehab of spent $1 million gut rehabbing those four properties. So that we could create four units of permanent affordable housing. But the point is, it's $1 million for four units. So it's not an inexpensive proposition. And so there is going to be a balanced approach. Preservation is very important, whether it's preservation of the public housing or preservation, as I mentioned, under the RAD program with $350 million of capital coming in, or whether it's these tax credit deals that are being done to build, in this case, in the next year, about 435 units of new affordable housing, and working with homeowners. Another big piece of what we do under vacants to value is to work with the existing homeowners in neighborhoods like Sandtown, Winchester, for weatherization, de-letting, roof replacements, energy-efficient roofs, you know, the white roofs that we do, boiler replacements. We have a program where you can replace an oil boiler or furnace with a gas-fired boiler or furnace, and the family will save about $970 per year. And so that's a terrific opportunity to help the low-income homeowners and renters in those communities.
That's Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano here on Midday on WYPR. Also with us is Ray Kelly, a community organizer with the No Boundaries Coalition. We're going to take another short break here and continue talking with them about Governor Hogan's plans for getting rid of blight in Baltimore. I'd like to talk to you also. We've got some folks waiting to talk to us. And if you'd like to join the conversation, our local number is 410-662-8780, and we're taking emails at midday at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Kasp. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Kasp. We're talking this hour about Governor Hogan's proposals to reduce blight in Baltimore. Here in the studio with me are Baltimore Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano and Ray Kelly, a community organizer with the No Boundaries Coalition, a lifelong resident of Sandtown. We're talking about Project CORE, which the governor says will spend hundreds of million dollars, about $75 million in demolishing vacants, and then hundreds of millions more to redevelop and to eliminate some of the problems that cause blight. One of the things I talked yesterday to a neighbor of yours, I guess, Ray Kelly, Lucky Crosby, who is also a lifelong resident of Sandtown. He's a community organizer with Sandtown United, and he's a former maintenance mechanic for the Housing Authority. And I asked him about using the demolition process to create jobs.
So what jobs are being created? Now, if you would have asked me how I would have created jobs, I would have had each one of the housing de-letted or letter baited before we started tearing them down. Then you could have created jobs, meaningful and high-wage jobs, during the hazard reduction. It was not done in that community.
Ray Kelly, is that a concern that you're hearing among your neighbors?
Like, that's the main issue is we're not inclusive. Where these opportunities, demolishing houses, there's opportunities for job opportunities for people in the community to kind of come in and help. We feel like when you don't use these indigenous developers and things like that, the community doesn't know. The opportunity isn't there for the contractors or entities that do that type of work in the communities aren't even abreast. And like Lucky said, there's people that have ideas and plans and have actually researched it from the inside out rather than looking at it from the outside in, who have these plans and ideas that they've seen how implementation has gone over the decades. And once again, that's something that has to change, the structure, the system that actually implements these things to include these communities that are going to be affected.
The city's representatives to the House of Delegates have been pushing for this state spending, to the extent that it is new spending, to be directed to jobs, especially jobs for people who are trying to reenter the workforce after having been incarcerated. I spoke this morning to Jeff Carroll, who's vice president of Humanum, a social mm-hmm. service agency which operates details deconstruction, right. Deconstruction as opposed to demolition. And he is hopeful that deconstruction will be part of how this goes forward. Commissioner Graziano, what can you tell us about that?
Yes, we've been working with Humanum, a couple of years now, I guess, on a demonstration, a pilot program of deconstruction. And deconstruction is the same outcome in the end of the building physically being gone, but having been eliminated. But it instead of going in there with a wrecking ball or a big claw and tearing it down, you actually send
teams. You should know that Commissioner Graziano is acting out the claw.
Acting out the claw. that we actually have people under Humanum. We have a contract with Humanum, and they train folks to do this, and they do work closely with the reentry program. They train folks to go in there and physically take the building apart. It's really quite a fascinating exercise. They go in and remove the wood, the timber in there, you know, cut the boards, take them out. They reuse the marble, the bricks are all taken out and cleaned up and put back on pallets and sent off to be sold. Baltimore bricks are wonderful brick. And so all that's happening in our demonstration program. As we've been negotiating the contract, the agreement between the state of Maryland, the city of Baltimore, and the Maryland Stadium Authority, we've made it clear, and they've agreed.
And the Stadium Authority, I should have mentioned, is actually going to implement these contracts.
Yeah, they will be the ones who will be overseeing the contractors. But we have said, we have insisted, and they've accepted that we want to dramatically expand that deconstruction program because, one, we think it's the way to maximize the amount of material being recycled in a very positive way and a sustainable way. And two, and maybe this should be number one, they're one and one, I guess, is that these are real opportunities for people to get real jobs in an industry that ought to be it will, in fact, be expanding in this city.
How much notice did you have before January 5th when Governor Hogan held his press conference? How much lead time did the city have?
We had it moved very quickly. This was really just a few weeks that we were back and forth in concepts, and it was really only a week or two before the press conference that we got it down to a point where they were saying, okay, this is what we'd like to put in an agreement. And, you know, we were specifically asked by the governor's folks to not publicly discuss it. They wanted to announce it, and I understand that. But I do want to say that this was a funding mechanism, and we are fully committed, and we've made it very clear to the state that we're going to work with the communities on plans, specific plans for those communities, and they have not at all objected to that. They understand that that's what we do, and that's what we want to do a lot more of.
We have a lot of callers who want to be part of this conversation, so let me sort of jump in and see how many we can get through. Monroe is calling us from Baltimore. Monroe, welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just have one report. It involves the Department of Housing and Baltimore City Council. Why don't they get off their dead butts and find out the owners of these properties? I know they've taken them and fined them, but this time it would be making the landlords that are on record pay for any work that is done on these houses, whether rehab or demolition. And if they refuse to do it, then put them on trial and throw them in jail. They are very rich. They can afford this. That would give the neighborhoods opportunity for the people living there to get really involved in there and possibly become some of the laborers for the rehab, demolition, and or new building.
So, Monroe, you're saying that you think that the governor's approach sort of lets the slumlords off the hook?
Yeah, I think that they've been letting the slumlords off the hook. They found them. Well, we're going to find you $1,500.
Let me see what folks here think about that. Ray Kelly, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I think in Baltimore City, you can see blocks that have been gone for decades where they just sit empty. And who is responsible for those properties? We have 3 feet of snow on the ground now, and a lot of blocks in our community have half-empty blocks where the sidewalks are unshoveled, people have to walk in the streets. But we have, you're going to get fined if you don't do your sidewalk, so you do your sidewalk, but still, you got to walk in the street because there's this blight. So, like I said, it's about those opportunities, making a way to bring people back into the communities.
Commissioner Graziano, slumlords.
Sure. Well, it's a complicated issue, and there are, let me just say this, anytime we invest any money in a property that we don't own, whether it's for demolition or boarding it up or stabilizing it or whatever, we put a municipal lien on that property. And so that in other words, we will, that put the cost of that as an obligation to the property. Now, what we find is that in many cases, these folks are long gone, and the property ends up going into a tax certificate process. And so in many cases, we have grabbed those properties because, you know, the taxes and the liens on them are greater than the value of the property. And my land resources team has actually taken many of those properties and bundled them and used them for other various redevelopment activities. I think the act of finding somebody in an area, if there's not a market for it, if you had 30 vacants in a row and you went after one guy, you know, years ago, this department would do that, and the case would get thrown out by the judge saying that, well, there's clearly no market.
Unequal application of the law.
Well, also that this guy's attorney will say, I can't get funding for this, financing for this, and even if I did, I couldn't sell it or rent it because there's 29 other vacants. So we try to take a more holistic approach here now. Receiverships are a very powerful tool, and I can talk more about that if you like.
I'd rather talk to Terrell, who's calling us from Baltimore. Terrell, we're down to just a few minutes. Your comment.
How are you doing today? Basically, I'd just like to just make a statement about the plight of the city. A lot of the city is already in a messed up state. Some of these properties that the people talk about, the city own them. It was a program like in D.C., like to revamp a lot of the properties. And what I suggest, the other guy y'all had on that was some real good information. What he was saying was to have somebody conductive. I mean, yeah, in your community where they might have these skills that can fix these houses up, you know, the ones that can be saved. And that can be a program where the citizens can participate in. It could be funding for that, whereas though they can see the development of their own community and not worry about somebody coming in and pricing them out of their community.
Terrell, I appreciate the call. We're down to just 2 minutes. So, Kelly, you've been hearing a lot.
And that's how we feel. We feel like in our community, there's a lot of opportunistic and a glory seeker, so to speak, that are using our community as a backdrop instead of helping to lift our communities, where they're popping in and we have these plans, but the community that's suffering is not a part of it and they don't benefit.
So very briefly, what are you hoping? What is the upside here? We've talked about some of your concerns. What do you think is the best that could come out of this proposal?
I think that the best thing that can come out of it is the city holding to their word. We have to come to the table. We have this demolition part that's happening right there. We need to start the planning process with communities and organizations that are already there to see what they've worked on, what's been planned, what's been suggested, and start to build the redevelopment process with indigenous community organizations and build from the foundation that's there.
Commissioner Graziano, we've left you only about a half a minute to say, how optimistic are you that that's going to happen?
I'm totally optimistic because I know we can't succeed without the communities. And as I was saying to Ray in the waiting room there, I'm ready to sit down literally any day in the next, we'll get past the storm perhaps, but next week or any time thereafter with the Sandtown Winchester community. The folks, the real people were there. We met with them before Labor Day. We're now ready, and we've got some resources.
Okay, we're gonna hold you to that. We will keep in touch with both of you as this unfolds.
Sure.
I appreciate your being with us today.
Thank
Ray
you.
Kelly, community organizer with the No Boundaries Coalition, a lifelong resident of Sandtown, and Baltimore Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano. I also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market, locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features sandwiches and salads, specials each day, all can be found at eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thanks to our listeners. Tune in tomorrow to our Friday News Roundup. We've got lots to cover, and I'd love to hear from you if you're still snowed in and haven't seen a plow. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey, Connor Graham, and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.